We're speaking with George Sparks, the CEO and president of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, about an exciting new endeavor, the Institute for Science and Policy, and a recent symposium held on December the 4th.
I think it was a spectacular success. I don't think there's been anything in my professional career I'm more proud of or excited about.
When people left the symposium, what is the main thing you hope they walked away with?
I think they walked away with hope that there are ways we can get together and talk with each other and not be hyperbolic, where we can come together. They saw a bunch of really smart, classy people from all over the country come together and talk about things in a way that was elucidating and invigorating to me. And the Institute could be a venue for us getting together and learning to listen to each other again.
What I loved about the different sessions is it wasn't about preaching science to the choir, because there were a lot of scientists in the room. It was about interacting with science and exploring how do we empower people with scientific information? How do we tell the story about science? How do we equip people to make better decisions?
To me, the big aha for all of us was it ain't about the science. It's about people, and it's about things like biases and personal interests and values, and it all relates back to science. But in the end, it's about us as human beings.
I particularly liked the session with Martin Karkason. He is amazing at being able to bring people together to talk about difficult things, to weigh some of those benefits and costs and values. Did you have a favorite session?
I think the one with the three women, the Colorado Academy student Jane, and then Tamar and Anne, that to me was the highlight of the day.
What was their main message?
Is storytelling good or not for talking about science? And if you're telling a story, do you innately have a point of view that you're pushing, or are you just using a story to make a general point? The most important thing to me was that Jane jumped right in there with these two very experienced women and held her own and actually was the star of the entire symposium, in my mind. Our lunch speaker, Charles C. Mann, who wrote 1491, 1493, and The Wizard and the Prophet. I'm a huge fan of his. I highly recommend his books to everyone.
Both the book and the speech that he gave at lunch has caused me to re-examine some of the choices in my own life.
It has caused me to be more thoughtful about how I approach the future and more thoughtful about how I think about how other people approach the future. I sent him an email afterwards, and he wrote back and he said, I've been to a lot of these, and almost all of them degenerate very quickly into scientists telling us how smart they are, and if we only knew what they knew, then the policy would be self-evident. He said he saw none of that during our symposium.
Was there any surprises at the symposium?
The thing that surprised me was that it went so well. Frankly, this was a pretty big undertaking, and we had a whole team of people working on it. And when the only thing that went wrong was the coffee was 5 minutes late after lunch, that's a pretty good day. It was a notable day in another respect, in that Xcel Energy, right outside our doors, was holding a press conference announcing that they're upping their carbon-free production at 2030, and they're going completely carbon-free by 2050. And then the president of Xcel Energy in Colorado, Alice Jackson, came in and spent a few minutes with us and talked about their plan. That was really exciting. That's serendipity right there.
That's awesome. Now, George, as I've gotten to know you, I know that you love science and that you love people, that this project of yours, this brainchild, the Institute for Science and Policy, combines those two things. Tell us a little bit about your passion in starting this institute.
Well, I think it came out of my frustration with our tribalism over the past several years, and increasingly we're off in our corners. We don't listen to each other. We don't talk to each other. We have our mind made up, and in some of these things, I think we're at great risk of really doing damage to the planet or to ourselves, to our families, to our cultures. I just decided somebody had to do something about it, so why not the Denver Museum of Nature and Science? And even though this was my idea, it was a completely team effort here. There were a lot of people involved in this, and it would not have happened without a very broad team of people. I now especially want to call out the Keystone Policy Center and Jacqueline McElwain and Mark Eddy for pulling this thing together, Lorez Meinhold. We had some really, really good leadership from some key people.
They did an amazing
job.
They
did indeed.
I would say that the Institute for Science and Policy is doing something very unique.
So our mission is to have science be used appropriately in creating good public policy. And what that means is that we regard science, that we treat it with what it is, something presumably more objective than most things, use it as a tool, not as something that's the only determinant of what public policy is, but something that's respected and used as part of the process.
What is unique about this institute is that it is housed here at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. This is the only one I know of that is attached to a major museum.
We're housing it at the museum because we have a very high trust rating with the public. Many institutions have lost that trust, and we think we still have it, and we'd like to do something with it. And we want to be careful about it and remain an independent, trusted convener and not get partisan.
Talk to me a little bit about convening. This institute's first symposium was about convening. What other kinds of ways of convening would this institute be doing over the next year?
Well, next year we hope to have three convenings, and unlike this one was more of a general session around what is science, how do you apply it to policy, how would policymakers like to engage. Our next convenings, we'd like to pick a topic like climate change or vaccinations and bring together people who have differing points of view and use the process like Professor Karkason's process to try to gain some clarity and hopefully more of a singular point of view coming out of the convening.
What do you hope to come out of these convenings?
Ideally, the people, once they leave the convenings, they would say, gosh, I never thought about things that way. I see why people would have a differing point of view. Maybe I should reconsider my position. Maybe we can compromise. Maybe we can come up with something where we can create better public policy based upon both of our points of view rather than just mine. You know, one of the things I've discovered in life is that most people are good. Most people are honorable. They're just trying to get by and they're trying to do the right thing. And the more that we can listen to each other rather than talk at each other, the more we can understand why somebody's coming from their position and maybe even modify our position.
I also understand that the Institute has worked with journalists and is also planning on meeting with lawmakers. Tell us a little bit about those convenings.
If we want public policy to use science, we're going to have to talk to the policymakers. And the policymakers are influenced by the public, by journalists, and by scientists who they call upon. So we're trying to pull all of those levers and get everybody on the same page on how would policymakers like to be engaged around this and how should they think about science.